Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Wastelanders and Vault Dwellers, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I have recently survived two hurricanes. Not one, two hurricanes that have decided to attack Florida over the last few weeks. This most recent one came almost directly over my home. It didn't quite go directly over, but for a while there, it seemed like it might. And I had to evacuate and stuff. And so if you are wondering where the episode was from last week and why there wasn't an episode, I've been a little bit busy trying to, you know, survive a hurricane. But everything worked out okay. We got back to our house once the power came back on. That took a few days, and I've kind of cleaned up and helped some neighbors and done some other stuff. So that's what I've been doing. But we are back, and it is October. This is something that I would have brought up last week had I done an episode, but it's October, and October sometimes on the show means spooky times with friends. And this time I wanted to bring in a guest, somebody who's been on the network for a while, somebody who joined me during our 300th episode celebration, and someone who knows a little bit about a moody scene and a mysterious situation. Preston from the True Vault Escapades, welcome to the show. How is it going?
Howdy, good. It's exciting to be here. I was just telling Tom how I am like really blowing through the Fallout Lorecast and am just so enjoying it. And I'm afraid of reaching the current episode and not having anything to listen to. So I'm really happy to be on this podcast because I clearly like it. But yes, it's great to be here.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, as people either lament the fact that they're late and they're like, oh, I'm so late. Or they lament the fact when they catch up. They're like, oh, I had so many episodes, but now I've caught up. What do I do now? But so there's only so much you can do. I try to put out episodes every week unless there's like a hurricane coming at me or something. But yeah, welcome to the show. You do a show that is also about Fallout, but is tonally, presentation-wise, a very different kind of thing. Why don't you give some of our audience who hasn't given your show, True Vault Escapades, by the way, I was going to make a joke and call it Escapades, True Vault Escapades. That sounds like something you'd see in like a, I don't know, like a fancy it's soap
like
opera.
I don't know if Fallout was in like a Mexican Fallout, and I have it's a skill magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
This capot is like, yeah. La Fentoma.
right. Tell us about your show. I know you've been doing it for a while, and it's definitely got that like film noir thing. There's some mystery going on. There's some other kinds of fun stuff. Tell us about it.
Okay, so True Vault Escapades comes from, I would say, a pipeline that Fallout introduced me to, and I have yet to come out of it. It's, of course, being young millennial and getting involved in Fallout for the first time, I had no clue about the Atomic Age and all of the era that it came with, and that includes the media, like radio and movies and things like that, and so... from Herbert Daring Dashwood all the way to the Silver Shroud, I wanted to produce something in that realm, something that encapsulated like pre-war 1950s, obviously, and turn it into a serial. And of course, after years of playing Fallout, I actually started to delve into that stuff. I started watching TCM, Turner Classic Movies, if anyone doesn't know. I'm watching black and white movies. I'm listening to old school radio, and I become even more inspired, and that's when I produce it. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is the particular show that helped me inspire this series, which just like that and many other series, it's about a detective and his girl Friday, and they're solving cases together, but in this case it's in the wasteland. It begins in the Texas Commonwealth, and we have settled for years now in the Mojave Wasteland and New Vegas. But yeah, it was seriously because I had never been introduced to history in such a way, and it all really sparked because of Fallout. So now, I mean, I'm like one of the only people in my age range that can like quote Sam Spade or one of few.
Right. Anytime you're surrounded by like grandfathers and great grandfathers, you have a lot to talk about. well, that's awesome. Well, because it is spooky month, it's October, and we've got Halloween around the corner, I wanted to delve a little bit into your experience with Fallout from that side of things too, like the spooky side,
sure,
the mysteries, and I'm going to combine that. We're not just talking spooky things like, oh, a Deathclaw is scary, but also the mysteries. Fallout is full of these kinds of mysteries, like you mentioned, in a broader kind of meta sense of, you know, like these characters and this formula or format for delivering this content. But then you also end up with side quests and characters with things going on, and you don't quite get all the details, so you got to kind of piece it together, or you have to read the environment, all of that stuff. Let's talk about your experiences early on with Fallout, when you discovered Fallout, and what mysteries and spooky stuff really hit you early on.
Oh boy. So the first Fallout I was introduced to was Fallout 3, which I think was many people's first introduction to the series. I was, first of all, speaking of spooky, I was absolutely terrified to pick up this game. This was like a pivotal transition moment from the times I was playing Crash Bandicoot and Spyro, and now I'm playing a game where you can shoot someone in the leg and their head blows off. So I was just really freaked out when I got it. And so
How old were you about
God, how old
the time?
Was I? I was maybe, I want to say I was 13-ish,
okay,
maybe 13. I kind of kept with the kiddie games or like the younger games because that's all I really cared about. I didn't really get into gaming up until that point, until I saw the teaser on television and it freaked me out. But yet I was really like intrigued. I was like, what is this? I want to play this, but it looks so scary and I don't like scary stuff. I don't even watch horror movies to this day, but there is something about sometimes freaky things that makes me want to, you know, I want to look even though I don't want to. But anyway,
right, it's the cover your eyes with your hands, but then peek between your fingers.
Exactly.
Thing,
right? That's always been the case. There's never been a crossing over to the line, like full blown watching like a horror movie or anything. I can do with the games though, because I've loved games since I was a child. But with Fallout, despite the fact that I probably had Fallout 3 on mute when I hopped into the Metro tunnels, that was one of the freakiest experiences in this era, in that era of gaming that I introduced myself into. The Metro tunnels was clearly one of the things that freaked me out. It was the ambiance, and I recall There was no music. There was no music in the Metro tunnels in Fallout 3. It just becomes, you know, just echoey. You can hear things in the distance. And of course, the ghouls.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Looking forward to the ghouls.
One of the things I do, I enjoy the music. I hope nobody misinterprets me here. I love the timepiece, this period kind of quality of the music that gets played in the world, the old jazz songs and the early rock and roll stuff, like that stuff is really cool. I love that stuff. One of the things I do, especially when I'm playing role-playing games where I want to feel like I'm in a place, is I will either turn way down the background music or I'll turn it off completely. And it's because that the thing that happens in a game where, like, oh, there's an enemy around the corner. The game knows there's an enemy there, so the music swells up and it kind of gives it away. That's something that I try to get rid of. Like, I almost feel like I don't mind it in a movie, but in a game, I almost feel like it's a little bit manipulating or a little bit revealing of things that I kind of want to just discover on my own. So I turn it all the way off. So I may not have even noticed that there was no background music in the subway because I didn't even have it on. Which is crazy to think about how, like, that experience could be so different for different people because of the way the music was set up.
Yeah, it's just like echo and kind of, I guess they might consider it a soundtrack, but it's kind of like this ongoing sort of sound, like you're in an echo chamber. So I don't know if that counts as music.
Right.
Definitely.
Fallout 1 did a lot of that. Like, if you look at the Fallout 1 soundtrack, there's a lot of these just like droning tones. These like, like that kind of stuff. So that makes sense. So it didn't feel so much like music. It felt more like a tonal setting that kind of just
emphasized the environment. To happy music or music playing in a certain platform on a platform game or something. And again, from my perspective, this was like completely new territory. And of course, Fallout 3 especially, I think, comes off as the freakiest Fallout game of all time just because of the desolate atmosphere. It very much is reminiscent of that. It's a book and a movie. What's it called? The Road. I don't know if any of y'all seen The Road.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that. And it was just, I was even afraid to leave Megaton at first. I was like, I don't want to go out there. Don't send me out there, Morrow Brown. Please don't. And the same goes for Super Duper Mart. When you go in there, the ambiance in there is very much similar to the Metro ambiance. It's so just droning and quiet, and there's things in there that are skulking around. I don't like that. But when it comes to the real like a true creepy mystery or side quest or something in that game, my favorite in the entire series so far is Andale, which is on the, I want to say it's like on the northwestern portion of the map. It's close to where the Brotherhood outcasts are staying. It has no like quest, so there's nothing connected to it. You can just go there and see what's going on. There's no objectives really. I named an episode of my True Fault Escapades after Andale just because of how profound it was to me.
Wow.
And for those that don't know, it's a little town in DC that has cannibals living there, and they're very happy and cheery, and they want to welcome you into the town. And it's like it's pre-war. They think it's a different year than it is, if I remember correctly. They still talk about voting and everything, and so the only person you have who warns you about it is the grandpa, I believe. He's like, get out of town, get out of here, these people are crazy. Of course, as you advance, you go and you find that there is human meat in the basement and the shed outside, and they confront you about it. And I just love how like tucked away that side quest or whatever you call it is, and how the ways you can handle it. You can even say, hey, I'm cool with what you guys do if your speech is high enough.
Right.
But that being said, that episode inspired the first Halloween episode of True Vault Escapades, which was called Bunny and the Mystery of Eladna, which is Andale backwards.
Oh. Hey, real quick, let's fill in people who haven't had a chance to listen to your show yet. Let's fill in a little bit, like the characters and what's generally going on in an episode, so people get a sense of it.
Right. I really did a cookie cutter detective and Girl Friday show. So Walter Camry is the first character we're introduced to. He's a wasteland detective with a secret Caesar's Legion background, and he used to be a criminal himself until he became a PI, and he lived out of Texas and just kind of did small time work until Bunny, who is this vault dweller, he's never seen a vault dweller before, hires him for a massive job to help solve the social experiment in her vault, which is the vault I made up, Vault 54. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing happens until, you know, I'll let new listeners figure out the way they want to. They become partners and they do different cases. It's like serialized now. Right. So we have, you know, the case of this, the case of that. So every episode explores a different aspect of Fallout, and Walter and Bunny just sort of insert themselves as detectives and the whole noir thing happens.
Right. So almost like a Mulder and Scully kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly.
If people are more familiar with something a little more modern than some of those old ones, like you might have seen The X-Files or you know, shows that were inspired by The X-Files. So yeah, it's kind of like that setup, right?
Transatlantic accents and the grain sometimes. In the older episodes, we put that film grain over to make it sound like it was coming from a radio station.
Okay, so this episode is inspired by cannibals in a creepy town that's overly friendly, and so that makes them even more creepy, right?
Very overly friendly, yes. This was one of our bigger guest starring episodes. We had Lane Compton, who you guys probably, if you're in the gaming world, you probably have heard his voice in Mafia 3. If you know about the Mafia series, he plays John Donovan, Lincoln Clay's CIA friend in Mafia 3. And I just so happened to get him to land on the Halloween episode, which is great. But Bunny and the Mystery of Aladna, we have Bunny crashing the detective's car. Yes, they have a car somewhere in the Mojave.
Cars don't exist in Fallout.
It's a fusion power armored car. So yeah, very Fallout-y. Well,
right. Somebody's going to at me and they're gonna be like, what about Fallout 2? And I'm like,
We find that in New Vegas. We find the Chrysalis Highwaymen in New Vegas, I think. But
that's the running joke, is that like Bethesda's never going to give us vehicles to actually work to drive around in. Yeah.
That's why we do it. And then shows like mine, because we're probably never going to get it.
Right.
But basically, Bunny is in backwards Andil, Eladna, and she crashes the car, is injured, is brought back to health by the Goodman family, who runs this weirdly quaint, built up almost as if it was never hit by the bombs town. Mm. And throughout her stay, she is told that a mechanic is fixing the car so she can get on her way. Everybody is just wonderful to her until she notices something. Throughout the day, she is taking sips of homemade tea.
Uh-oh.
And in these, she goes, the Goodmans first offer her tea to get her back on health. They say it's like a health tea. And she goes next door, meets this old lady. She gets some tea from her. And then she goes to a bar and she has some tea instead of alcohol. They just push the tea on her. And she has these sort of visions every time she drinks the tea. And in these visions, she's actually getting some kind of like flashbacks of this town when it was first getting started, and she starts to notice that something weird's going on. The Goodman family and the whole town seem to be turning on their own and killing folks, and so she's thinking it's just a weird dream until she wakes up and she's in someone's basement. and we get to learn that this town basically is a kind of modified Andale. They give newcomers the tea, and the tea will either brainwash you completely and you become another one of their happy-go-lucky members. Mm-hmm. And if it does not work with your system for whatever reason, then you are the next meal. And that is Bunny's little experience here, and she learns through these visions that, oh crap, there is something going on here. We don't know why she gets them,
right,
but that is Bunny and the Mystery of Eladna.
There you go. Yeah, and you're not spoiling the ending, so if you want to go, if you want to go look up this episode, you can go listen to it. Well, that's fun. Okay, I mean, that is an absolutely direct influence from Fallout 3 to your show. Do you find that it's more of these individual situations that you kind of play off of, or more of the general mood or situational content? Like, what do you find more inspiring?
You know, I think a little bit of both, but when it comes to something that has such, like, I guess an effect on me, like Andale did, it's like, I have to be more direct there. Like, I want to continue the Andale legacy, because I doubt they're going to be visited ever again.
Well, hopefully we get a remaster at some point. I would love.
I would love a remaster. Yeah. And that goes for other things. I've visited other topics on this series, like, let me think here. La Fantoma, for instance, the skill magazine in Fallout New Vegas. I usually discover things that aren't really elaborated on in the lore, because I will check like every single thing I can find. And if something just exists there and we just kind of accept exists there, mm-hmm. I will do my best to make a little bit of a backstory. And La Fantoma, for instance, is an episode I had a whole backstory made out of how like the owner, the creator made it as this independent comic book. And then Hubris Comics tries to buy him off. And this whole like corporate backstabbing thing happens. And Walter and Bunny figure out like this 200-year-old mystery. So in regards to that, it's really direct things I take that's inspiration
cool.
from.
That yeah. is really cool. One of the you. Things that I get a lot of requests from, a lot is relative, but every so often I will get somebody who reaches out, whether it's on Discord or sends me like a private message sometimes even. And in fact, sometimes they'll even leave it in a review and they'll go, hey, love the show, blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. And then they'll say, you know, it'd be really cool to have an episode about this. And 90% of the time, the reason they want an episode about that one thing is because there just isn't that much information about it, which means that there's not very much information for me to look up about it either. So like in that case, I would have looked that up and been like, well, maybe there's a backstory here. And it's like, well, no, actually, there's not. It's just that's the name of the magazine.
Yeah.
And we don't know why that's the name of the magazine. We don't know anything else about it. It hasn't been mentioned anywhere else in any subplot, any side story, any, you know, holotape, nothing. And it's like, well, I can't do an entire episode if like you can summarize everything you know in one sentence, you know. But it's cool that you're doing something where you discover something like that. And instead of it being like, I don't know, something that I look at and go, well, I could combine that with a bunch of other things we don't know things about and do kind of like a group of those in an episode. But you just go, well, hey, there's an opportunity here to just expand it and turn it into something else for the show. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's almost like it's like a given plot point. I just have to expand on it. We'll give one more example. The Legend of the Star series in our show. It's 5 episodes long. It's all about the backstory of Alan Marks, the guy that Malcolm Holmes warns you about the Blue Star bottle caps. He's like a mercenary and he's killing people for it. Mm-hmm. I made like a whole thing about him and who he's about and what he's about and who is close to him and how everything went crazy. So yeah, it's great to just expand on things. They just kind of plop there.
Yeah, that's cool. So do you have any other examples that come to mind of things that you kind of were just like, hey, this is a fun little detail, let's expand it into something, especially if it's mysterious or spooky?
Okay, so one of the, I think an underrated, spooky aspect about Fallout that I, tied into the show was, of course, when Fallout 4 came out, we had an idea of most of the mutants we would see, of course, a few, but one of the ones that stood out to me that we hadn't seen in previous games was the Myrlurk Queen. Mm-hmm. And I distinctly recall doing the mission where you clear out the castle with Preston Garvey.
Don't give Preston explosives. He will blow you up on that mission. Yes.
I remember I knew something was going to pop off when you were killing all of the Myrlurks there and you felt like the ground shake and they talked about some sea monster. When I saw the Myrlurk Queen come out of the water, that freaked me out. It was the noises they make, how deep and guttural they are, and they're shooting babies at you the whole time.
Right? Yeah, the shooting
that
babies
freaked
part.
Me.
Yes.
And they look so ugly. It's like, dude, like a Deathclaw is one thing. Do not let that thing get close to me, because I was running away, putting mines and grenades. So with that, I had an episode called The Case of the Cursed Cruise, which also had a voice actor as a guest star, Ryan Alosio, who plays Deacon from Fallout 4. He's in that episode.
That's great.
That episode is about the detectives, and they go on this cruise in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's supposed to be a vacation. Then there's a weird storm that comes, and people are missing after the storm's done, and people are trying to write it off as people just got tipped over into the water when there is a Myler Queen about, and someone, not the captain, well, I won't spoil it for you, but someone wants that boat to get caught up in the storm and feed their pet Myler Queen.
Oh, great.
And so yes, that, you know, it may not be the creepiest thing like Halloween standards, but the Myler Queen is just gross, and it creeped me out, and I was like, I gotta do an episode about the Myler Queen.
Yeah
In
that sense, I mean, it's almost like it's like a kaiju coming, a giant monster coming out of the Gulf to eat people on a cruise ship. That's great. Yeah, those situations, I think that was something that doesn't get talked about enough about Fallout 4, is the way they were able to expand situations out into these more set piece kind of, you know, environments.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good example of one, because everyone, you know, you have to go through that part as part of the main quest line.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember that, you know, the big old Myler Queen. I remember also feeling kind of incapable at the time of fighting it and being like, I don't know.
It's massive.
I don't think I brought enough bullets for this. What am I going to do?
Yeah, I was so ill-prepared when I went there. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? And when the Minutemen aren't helping, there's like four of them and they're all getting killed by that thing. So yeah, I definitely felt isolated by that thing.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, tell you what, why don't we take a quick break? I've got to go thank our patrons, and I've got some reviews to read out, and we'll come back in a little bit and we'll talk some more Fallout spooky stuff and mysteries and other things going on with Preston here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
All right. Well, I'm so glad that I'm able to be back. I'm so glad that my stuff is still here. The house didn't explode with the hurricane or tornadoes coming through or anything like that. So that I can thank our newest patrons who have signed up in the last few weeks. We have Doug D. We have John Deere Outlaw and Emily M. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join us. I hope you're enjoying the ad-free episodes and all the other stuff that you can get depending on the different levels that you sign up at. We also have to shout out our Sentry bot, Atlee Morton. Thank you so much for your support as well. And to all 104 of our current supporters on Patreon, thank you so much. And you can also sign up for free if you want to just kind of make sure that you're plugged in and get notifications. One of the first places I respond or let people know about stuff when something comes up is on the Patreon. I'll post like a text about what's going on or why there might not be an episode this week or whatever. So it's a great way to stay kind of plugged in. You can also join us on the Discord and social media and all sorts of other places. Also, in the last 2 weeks, we've got some other reviews that have come in. This one came in from Enclave Lover 209 in the United States, who writes, "The best Fallout lore podcast, a great podcast. I listen to it every day. If I get annoyed at all, I just pop in an AirPod and calm." I guess my show's calming. One suggestion I have is that you make a lore episode on, I think this is a typo, it says fig crawler, which I'm pretty sure is not a thing. Fog crawler, I suppose, and or an angler. This is an example. Preston, this is an example of one of those things that comes up. There's probably some information on them, but there's probably a certain lack of information on them. But tell you what, I like doing monster episodes. We'll see what I can find, and who knows, maybe we'll do an episode on them in the future. Then we have thank you so much, Enclave Lover. Then we have Scotland Topaz from the US, who writes, "Very genuine and down to earth. This podcast has made my work days so much more enjoyable over the past few months. I have been battling the PPD, and turning this on has allowed me to escape to a full world and nostalgia of Fallout. I joined the Discord and Tom made it so personal just by giving a wave. He's super down to earth and just an overall wholesome just an overall wholesome dude. I think that's what that's supposed to say. That has made my love for Fallout grow. Keep up being you. Well, thanks, Scotland Topaz. And then this one more from also in the U.S. Rogue Tunnel Snake writes, praise the Lorecast. I pretty recently started listening to the Fallout Lorecast starting way back at the beginning, and Tom does a fantastic job. I can't recommend the Fallout Lorecast enough for Fallout fans of any level. And frankly, all the shows on the Robots Radio Network are phenomenal. Special shout outs to the Witcher Lorecast, which I just started this week. Tom's style of podcasting does a wonderful job of explaining various topics within Fallout lore, teaching me new things and reminding me of things I had forgotten about. But Tom takes it up a notch past average lore in a way that keeps my ADHD buzz brain engaged and entertained. Whether Tom is just giving fun commentary, interesting hypothetical questions and scenarios, or finding ways to relate crazy events in Fallout down to the most basic human aspects, Tom never fails to disappoint. 11 out of 10, my friend. Well, thank you so much, Rogue. If you'd like to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, I'll read it out on a future episode of the show. You can also rate the show on Spotify or whatever other platform you're on. You can also share it with your friends and all of that stuff. But we've got more talking about some spooky stuff to do, so here we go.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
All right, Preston, we're back. And you've been talking about Fallout 3 and Fallout 4. If we continue moving along the timeline of released Fallout games, you get to Fallout 76. And of course, that one's controversial. It had a rough launch. It's been much improved over the last almost 6 years now. In fact, it'll be the 6th anniversary this month. I think.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that much time passed. That's crazy.
Let me know if I'm wrong about that. Yeah, 2018.
Yeah, 2018. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow, time flies.
Everything in the last few years is just kind of a weird mush. But so in Fallout 76, of course, they've got cryptids. They have some very spooky situations. The DLC that released most recently, I guess it's non-purchased DLC, it's free, the free update, has a new location with these like electrified ghouls and some more scary situations with them. Do you have any Fallout 76 connections here? Is there anything from that's inspired your work?
We are in luck because one of my recent episodes happens to be called The Case of the Martyred Mothman. Ooh. And I really started to get into writing some 76 styled content as I've immersed myself in the game more. I had taken a long break from 76 and I came back and fell in love with it, like way more than I originally did. And with that, I actually have a few coming up. But this one is about, of course, the creepiest, one of the creepiest factors in 76, which is the Mothman cult. The Mothman cult freaks me out, especially if you blow them apart with bloody mess and you still hear them whisper their final dying words, even though they're just like a puddle of goo on the ground. I know that's not really intended, but it's still freaky.
it's one of those things that I feel like they may have noticed it and were just like, it's fine, just leave it.
It adds to it. It's
so makes
freaky.
It weirder. Yeah, we'll just leave it there. Yeah. How are they talking? They're a puddle of goo.
Yeah. I mean, like, I use the, the cold shoulder a lot, and they'll be blown in pieces. And they're like, I'm coming, Mothman. I'm like, oh, no, absolutely not. But the case of the Martyred Mothman, my biggest question for this one was, how do I integrate something from 76 all the way into Fallout New Vegas, where my show takes place?
That's a good question.
That's where, some illegal trafficking comes in play. We have a mobster and he has a big order from a shady group in the Mojave Hills, and they want a special creature all the way from West Virginia. And in comes this caged beast that they call up there the Mothman. And what was supposed to be a quick exchange, well, it falls apart because the Mothman gets mad and he breaks out of the cage and starts terrorizing the Mojave wasteland. Thus, it brings in Walter and Bunny and the NCR to try and lead an assault on not just the creature, but the weird sect from West Virginia that moved into the Mojave.
They follow the Mothman over. That's great.
No, so the way I put it, it's kind of vague the way I wrote it, but basically the Mothman cult or a piece of them comes down and they want to just spread the Mothman's message. They're like, we hear there's a lot of activity in the Mojave with Vegas and all. We're going to introduce, you know, our guy. And so they come down there and they place an order for some shady individuals to capture a Mothman and actually ship it. And of course, it didn't go all the way through, and now it's out everywhere. And of course, that brings Walter and Bunny to be like, okay, we got to find out who made this order. And when they go there, it's not pretty. There's all kinds of sacrifices, and they send a troop of NCR men over there, and there's this awesome scene. There's an awesome scene where the NCR troopers are going in there to hopefully do like a little spec ops thing and just take out the cult. But the cult has the upper hand. They're in the woods somewhere and they are getting ambushed. And now it's just kind of back to square one. I won't, of course, spoil it. But yes, I found the Mothman cult to be just uber creepy. And I knew they were going to explore that in 76 with all of the Appalachia folklore they have up there, and Mothman's like their biggest character, so it's like I had to do something. And I love the way they integrated it in the game, and so that's how I decided to tie it into my show.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's a fun premise. Also, taking something out of one location and kind of relocating it in a slightly different location. There's something about cryptids in the woods, right? Like, yes. Like, oh, it's trees. It's hard to tell what's in the distance. Is that just a part of a tree? Is that a person? What is that? Are those eyes? Is that just a reflection of, you know, some stars or the moon over there? But then to take that kind of creature and put it into the Mojave, the very different kind of feeling, just because of the setting changes, right? Like spooky forest is one thing. Spooky, like desert? That's something about that just feels even more barren. Like when you're in a forest, you're assuming that there are a bunch of other animals around because they're the kinds of places where there are lots of animals, whether it's like, squirrels or chipmunks in the trees, or, you know, more predators or birds or whatever. But when you're out in a desert situation and you look around and you're like, I can't see anything, especially something that's like human sized or bigger. And then all of a sudden you feel like you're being hunted by something that's human sized or bigger and you can't see it because it's like, you should be able to see it. That's even more, difficult.
You can hide in the forest, but not out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, you just like find a rock and curl up somewhere. Like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting clash of worlds there, and it really made me want to explore more with the Mothman. In fact, I announced recently on my socials that I would be taking the series to the actual timeline of 76 for the first time. It won't involve my detectives because it's out of the timeline, but I make these things called Escapade Extras now, where it's like just little side pocket stories. And one I have written and almost ready to go right now is called I Married a Mothman Cultist, and it's going to feature Zach Finfrock from Nuka Break is going to be playing the lead in that one, which is really exciting.
Is it a playoff of I married an axe murderer?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If anyone doesn't know, that is a movie from the mid 90s with Mike Myers, not the murderer from Halloween, the comedian who also did Austin Powers and Wayne's World and stuff like that. And it is one of those like gems of a movie that just kind of like still holds up pretty well because it's Mike Myers and it's ridiculous, but it also has to do with like, you know, so I married an axe murderer. And what's going on with that? Yeah. So it's pretty good. Yeah. So does it like basically take the plot and kind of rearrange it for your situation?
Yeah. So it began from my camp location. I have my camp in the Toxic Valley, and just a bit north of that is this place called Clancy Manor. And it's like one of the biggest congregations of the Mothman cults. You can go, I usually go there for like challenges and stuff. And it just looks, it's just dilapidated, like trees growing out of it place. It used to be this grand manor, and I'm like, that would be cool if I could make like an origin story to that manor and how it got so, like, why there, why do they choose that place? And so it's gonna involve two responders from White Spring who more or less retire and move there. Uh-huh. And we see You know, it's kind of in the title, but we see how Clancy Manor came to be. And so that's going to be a different kind of side course here, because I've never explored a different game in the series besides New Vegas. And mm-hmm. we're like, what, 73 episodes in? Yeah. Never done that before. So it's going to be a fun little deviation.
Yeah. Yeah. How long have you been doing your show for? Eight
I've
years?
Been doing it since July of 2016.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? It's crazy. I'm like, oh, geez, I've been at this for a bit. And I used to be the sole writer, editor, producer. And that's why sometimes the quality is a little like lower, but it sort of works because I put that radio static and you can't really tell because it just sounds like an old school show. Now it's like professionally done by my great editor, Ethan Walsh. But yeah, it's been going on for what is that? Eight-ish years?
Eight-ish
oh my
years.
Gosh. Yeah. I wanted it to come out before Fallout 4, actually, because I was like, oh, there's a lot of hype around Fallout. Let's do this. But oh, that took a long time. But anyway.
Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. And I mean, that's a good number of episodes, especially because, you know, it's like actual written voice acted content that like takes a lot to do an episode. I do some research, I sit in front of a microphone, and then I talk for, you know, half an hour or whatever. And yeah, you got to do the research part, but it just takes me and a little bit of, you know, a quote, little bit of effort compared to a team of people who are doing lots of different voice lines. You've got to write it. You've got to get it out to everybody. You've got to edit it all together. Yeah. There's always a lot more work for that kind of show for sure.
Oh yeah, it's an excruciating wait because I'm a fan of my own show, and so whether I write it or if my friend Joshua Belmonte he writes some episodes too, I'm just waiting for my editor to like upload a render. I'm like, let's go, I want to hear it. It's been in my head for like months, and then we wait, and it usually takes about a month or so to pump out a fully finished episode. So yeah, it's fun regardless. It's so worth it.
Nice. All right, so now that we've kind of covered the Bethesda fallouts, we've talked about three, you've talked about New Vegas being kind of an influence and in the location, all mm-hmm. of that. We've got four, we've got a little bit of cryptid stuff from 76. One of the things I like to discuss with people when they join me on this show, especially people who have been playing Fallout games for a very long time, people who are content creators, people who spend a lot of time thinking about Fallout stuff, is that there's always another game on the horizon, or at least it seems that way. Hopefully, fingers crossed, things continue. Sometimes some people have lost some faith with Bethesda because they weren't happy with the 76 launch, or they didn't like Starfield so much. But it's now in the hands of Microsoft, right? And we might get a Fallout 5 after Elder Scrolls 6 sometime in the next decade. Who knows if they hand off the IP to a studio like Obsidian again in order to do kind of a side Fallout that isn't necessarily 5, but it's something still Fallout focused. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the future of Fallout, especially when it comes to these kinds of stories, mystery and intrigue and spooky tales, is there anything that you are looking forward to or think they should do, or are, you know, are a continuation of the things that they've done before that you want to see in the next Fallout game? Like, where do you think they're going to take that side of Fallout?
Oh, gosh.
It's a tricky question. There are a lot of components to Fallout. There's the sci-fi stuff. There's the retrofuturism.
Yeah.
There's surviving in the wasteland. There's the political corporate like critiques. There's a lot of different angles that go into Fallout. But there's always an element of the occult. There's always an element of, you know, the old timey kind of mystery setups, monsters. It's such a hodgepodge of all these wonderful things.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird when you put it that way. It really does show that Fallout has like a lot of different things that make it what it is. You know, kind of like I was mentioning with Fallout 3, if there is one thing I would love to see them just crank the volume up a little bit on, is the creepy atmosphere a little bit. Mm-hmm. Fallout 3 just had that. And I mean, New Vegas has it too. And that is another thing I like with Fallout, is that each game has its own sort of flavor. But I do sometimes think, like when I play 4 and 76, I'll be like, you know, I kind of miss the desolation of it a little bit more. And it still has that spark, but I definitely felt a lot more unsafe in Fallout 3. I felt like going into that next building just a few steps ahead and not having everything I need, it could be a complete risk to my character. So am I going to do it? And it's, other than that, like the mutants and the factions and everything, I think they're doing swell with those. I love that. I do want there to be a little more of a sense of danger, I guess. And I feel like that's something that they could just, I don't think it would be that hard. I feel like they could just do something. I don't know what it is, but they something in the air in Fallout 3 that really makes me feel like I'm truly in a dead place with little signs of life and you just don't know what's ahead. And I think that for the next Fallout, whatever it may be, please be in Texas. I think they could just maybe do something. I don't know if it's the music, the atmosphere, the droning, like we talked about, but just that little spark that made it freaky, you know, just a little freakier.
Yeah. I've got some theories. I'd love to hear your thoughts on these theories. When you go back to Fallout 3, one of the big differences between Fallout 3 and New Vegas and Fallout 4 and 76 is graphical fidelity. There was a big jump in graphical fidelity between New Vegas and 4. So much so that, I mean, you had console generations show up. The amount of detail you could put in a scene increased it feels like a real place kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like you walk into a building or a room and not only do you have the textures on the walls and those things are higher resolution, but you also just have more trinkets, more things on the floor and things around you. It feels kind of like a space that you would be familiar with, littered with things. But when you go back to Fallout 3, there's a lot of empty space. There's a lot of like a lack of stuff in environments. And on top of it, you have environments that are much lower resolution. They're lower polygon counts and things like that. And there's this kind of uncanny valley quality to, I'm in a space that's supposed to be a real space, but there's something weird when I look in the distance and I just see repeating textures. It almost feels like a fever dream as opposed to a real space where, like, oh, the textures actually do change in the distance. Or I don't know if I'm describing it very clearly, but I think there's something about that limited technology that creates a feeling of unease that is unintentional, but very effective. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's what do they call that? Liminal spaces.
Yeah.
It kind of had a little bit of that going on.
Right.
Like, for instance, that Super Duper Mart. I mean, I know you had a bunch of raiders in there, but like, I remember like walking in there and it's like just so dark and empty, and it didn't seem, I mean, they clearly picked that place clean too, which also kind of helped with the atmosphere. But it is like this sort of something when you walk into a building in those games or just any space, and it's just like, it just looks like everybody packed up their stuff and left, and it's and piled on top of the wasteland aspect makes it even creepier. And that's not to say like Fallout 4 and 76 doesn't have that. It's just, I don't know if it's polygon. I don't know anything about game developing, so I don't know what it is. I love them both. There was something that they had going on with especially interior spaces like that, especially vaults. I felt like the vaults in Fallout 3 and 4 especially creep me out a hell of a lot more than the ones in Fallout 4 and 76. Especially like, what was it? Was it 108 with the super mutants? Oh my gosh, that was creepy. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think that maybe just the, I don't know. It may be a tech thing. It may be, there's something that when you see a character, here's another fun detail. You can play Fallout 4 in VR, right? If you've done that before, you know what it looks like to like look at a Mr. Handy eye up close. This is one of the great examples, and you can see the modeling detail up close in VR in a way that you don't really see it when it's just on a computer screen. And I bring up the Mr. Handy eye, for example, because if you look up close at it, obviously the textures could be even higher resolution. They're not perfect, but you can see the little details in the metal, but then also the way the glass curvature, and there's like a concave piece in the middle where the like the pupil of the eye goes, and you can see all of those pieces three-dimensionally because you're looking at it with both of your eyes, and just the level of detail and the amount of polygons in just like that one little thing in Fallout 4 is significant enough that it makes you look at it and go, I feel like I could just reach out and touch that. Like, I know what that feels like if I were to just touch it. And that, I don't think that's really a thing you get with Fallout 3. I mean, even look at the power armor, the detail in the power armor, completely different. The way characters stand is just a little, like a little bit more Minecrafty, like rigid, you know?
A little more T-posey.
right. Everything's just a little bit like, hey, just reminding you, you're playing a video game from the 2000s, you know, like it's kind of get that quality to it. But that also lends itself to a certain level of like, this is just kind of creepy. Like sometimes, and I think maybe here's another detail. So much of game design when it comes to animation has moved to actual movement capture in the last,
that's true too.
You know, 10, 15 years. So when you have a ghoul running at you, chances are they had a big room with a bunch of people in mocap suits, and they would have them run across the room, and then they would capture their movement, and then they would replay them in the ghouls. There's something that, again, more that feels very real because it's a human body moving. But if you take that out and you just hand animate stuff, there's a certain level of jank, no matter how good the animator is, that your brain just goes, that isn't quite real.
Right.
And when it's a monster, it comes across as more disturbing. It's not so much, oh, that's not how a person moves. And this, you know, it's more about the creatures, because
super uncanny. Yeah.
Right. There's this uncanny quality to like, oh, well, that creature just barely moves its legs and it walks across the screen. That's weird, you know, or whatever. I think that there are some elements that go into that stuff. And I just like any art form, if you can draw from the things that are most effective in getting an emotional reaction, as opposed to just a flat out focus on realism or something like that, then sometimes that's the better way to go. And you, as a content creator, somebody who's writing stories, I would assume that you get this. Sometimes it's not about wrapping things up in a way that just makes the most sense. It's about wrapping things up in a way that's going to make it more interesting, or get more of an emotional reaction from the audience, so you can play off of that on the next episode or whatever. If you were to just do the stuff that makes sense, then, you know, we wouldn't have any fantasy in the creation
at all.
That is
true. Yeah, there's a fantasy factor to that. It's kind of like when you see old cartoons. I think old cartoons have that sort of vibe about it. I know they don't do motion capture for cartoons, but it's like you can tell a old cartoon versus a new cartoon, and the movements and things like that. So,
the rubber hose comics
there.
Like, you go back to the 1920s and the rubber hose movement of like early Disney films, and there's something that's very stylistic about it, but you're never going to confuse it for being real.
Exactly. So, right.
I don't know. I think there might be something to that in those old games.
Yeah, the kind of more deadpan stares they have in, say, the older Fallouts, because they didn't either have the budget or the technology at the time to sort of, you know, mimic human faces as accurately as like the new ones. They like move their arms when they talk, and you know, their faces change, where it's like they may have like one or two movements in Fallout 3 in New Vegas when they speak to you, but other than that, they're just like staring at you.
I think they should purposely work some of that back in when they're dealing with like a creepy individual. It's basically an extrapolation of what you mentioned about how the music changes when you go underground in Fallout 3. It's not just about these are the monsters you're going to see, this is the story you're playing through, this environment is dark. It's about taking into consideration how the scene is presented, like a director, and going, well, this music is really going to affect this well. And I would recommend in future stuff, if you're talking to a character who just seems off, then make the camera seem off too. Make their animations a little bit weird. You know, like, don't just put the hints of they seem off in their dialogue or the situation in the environment you're in. Like, incorporate like actual direction into that in a way that makes everything feel like the benefit of this is that it hits you subconsciously before you realize what's happening.
Yeah. There's probably like a psychological bent to it.
Right. This character feels weird, but I don't know exactly why. But then you think about it for a minute, you're like, oh, the camera never just squarely looks at a character like that anymore. They're more dynamic than that. But for this character, it's not dynamic. That's weird. Like, why is it like that? Right?
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if it's the colors too, because you know, Fallout recently had started bringing like vibrant colors to the Wasteland, whereas, like, of course everyone jokes now, 3 and 4, it's like one's got green tint and one's got the orange tint,
right?
And you know, I do think sometimes that greenish tint in Fallout 3 also just sets the mood a little better.
Yes.
So but that being said, I think the ghouls are scarier in the new Fallouts because of well, I think the way they shuffle is weird. It's creepy. Mm-hmm. They do little movements on their own, and then you can shoot them and their arm comes off and they're still swinging at you with the other arm.
Oh, I love that. That's, yes.
Yeah, it's great. They crawl on the walls and out windows and stuff. So, you know, they definitely improved on that. And ghouls were already scary. I didn't know you can make them scarier, but I think the newer ones really, you know, improved. So
they run faster too. Like when they target you and they like book it across the street in like 2 seconds and you're like, how does this ghoul move
this fast?
They vault
at you. It's so creepy. And they'll somersault trying to grab you, and then they'll just get right back up and do it again.
Yeah,
that is pretty good. They did a good job on that. So there's hope for a lot of things in terms of the scariness. I mean, I think I think it is still a freaky wasteland out there. So yeah,
true. Well, as we get to the end of this episode, is there anything else you want to say about creepy stuff or mystery stuff or anything else that's inspired you?
Oh, let's see. There is one I wanted to mention from Fallout 4's Nuka World. There was I wrote it down. It's that mansion, that haunted mansion in Nuka World that you can tour, that supposedly a little girl's in there and you do see her, which is so freaky. I inspired last year's Halloween episode, Haunted House Blues, literally like in my mind, like room by room of that building. Of course, I made it a little bigger because there's like bigger things going on in it. But in that one, I have Walter and Bunny. There's like a yearly Mojave attraction. This was a pre-war house where a murder happened, and the family who was ghoulified now still lives there, and they make caps by doing yearly tours in there and come to find and I put in another element from Fallout 3 in this one as well, and this one's from the family. If you remember them, they live in the Metro Tunnel, and they were not cannibals, right? They're vampires. And in this case, the family that runs that house and lures people in, they have that same vampiric hunger, and unfortunately, unlike the family, they don't do it in a nice way. You know, the family was kind of like, hey, we drink blood and we're doing it out of the dead. We're not trying to like hunt people. Whereas this one, they're like, oh, we're hungry and we are going to get you. And so, and so Walter and Bunny, there's like a hall of mirrors in this one. There's a secret river underneath the building that Bunny gets captured in. They get separated and they're all trying to figure out where to go. And they try to solve this mystery of the freaky, I called it the Schaefer House, and in the Haunted House Blues. So that was another huge inspiration from Fallout 4, because I loved that haunted house portion in the DLC.
Yeah, a combination of haunted house and vampires. That's sounds good to me. That's awesome. Well, I hope people take a minute, especially as we get closer to Halloween, to check out some of these episodes you've mentioned and kind of dig into your show as well, because there's, like we mentioned, there's 70 some episodes. There's a lot of a lot of good content and different storylines, so you can kind of jump into the one that you want if you either start at the beginning or kind of skip ahead, whatever. And Preston, thank you for joining me. This has been super fun.
Thank you for
chatting
having
about
me.
All this stuff. How can people find your stuff? What's the best way to check out what you're doing, keep up with it, all that?
You can find True Vault Escapades, a Fallout audio drama, on any podcatcher. So Spotify is our most listened to platform, and of course we're on Apple, and we're even on YouTube if you would rather listen to it on YouTube. We're quite literally, we're on Amazon podcast as well. So we are just about everywhere, and would really appreciate those of you who might find that concept interesting to check it out and see if you like it. There's a whole lot to listen to. As Tom said, there is a whole lot to listen to, and you won't be running out of episodes anytime soon. So I just hope you enjoy the ride, and I appreciate everyone who wants to go and give it a listen.
Awesome. Yeah, go check out his stuff. Whatever you're listening to this on, you can probably listen to that on. And thanks again for joining me, and I will be back next week. I'm pre-recording some episodes. I'm actually going on vacation, but I'm going to have, don't worry, pre-recording episodes should everything work out and we don't get another hurricane or anything. Things should be smoother from this point moving forward. But thank you to everybody for the support, and Preston for being here, and I will see
you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, see you all next week. Stay safe in the wasteland until then, and watch out for any vampires living in spooky houses. See you then.
To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So, both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.